Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine.
BBC World Service. Welcome to part three of Local Warming, coming to you from my drought-stricken home state of California. I'm Sasha Coca, a radio reporter here for a statewide program called The California Report. California's been in the grips of a punishing drought for more than 4 years. I have two young kids, they're 5 and 3. And in their lifetimes, we've seen very little rain or snow, especially where I live in California's Central Valley. In fact, the storms this fall have brought some of the first significant rain we've seen in a long, long time. It's such a rare sight, my kids aren't quite sure what to make of rain puddles. The drought is just one sign of serious environmental challenges in California. The state's also coping with raging wildfires and torrential mudslides. Even though there's skepticism about climate change in some quarters of the U.S., polling data show most Californians think these kinds of extreme weather events are likely intensified by a warming climate, and most think climate change is driven mostly by human activity. Polls also show people here support California's laws to limit greenhouse gases and expand renewable energy use, some of the most aggressive targets of any U.S. state. We're going to take a road trip through California to find out what climate change means to people here, from the urban heart of San Francisco to rural farm country, from liberals to conservatives, and how far people are willing to go to address climate change. We'll start near my home in Fresno, the heart of America's most productive farm belt. We're standing in a rural community about 15 minutes outside of the city of Fresno. It's a cluster of about 30 homes, and half of them have run out of water because the wells went dry during the drought. I'm here to see Guillermo Lopez. His family had to live without water for 9 months until they finally got some help. Like many in this rural community, the Lopez family's roots are in farm work. And one day, their tap just went dry.
We just turned the water on and nothing was coming out. We heard the well running and it got louder and louder, something's going on. And before it turned off completely, like, it would come out like really slow, like it's spitting it out. And that's when it completely just stopped.
The Lopez's house isn't hooked up to a city water system. People here rely on household wells to pull up water from an underground aquifer. During the drought, the water table's been dropping fast.
They say you don't know how important the water is until you turn on the faucet to wash your hands or something simple or just flush the toilet, and you don't have the ability to do that anymore.
So, Guillermo, we're in your bathroom here. You've got a giant blue plastic water tank, looks like, with a is that sort of a hand pump on top?
Yes, it's a hand pump that sucks the water up from the 5-gallon jug to the top. So like when we had to wash our hands, wash our face, or brush our teeth, we would use that and a bucket on the bottom to hold the water.
It's amazing because you use so little water when you're doing that.
Oh, yes. Like compared to before, we leave the faucet on, sometimes leave it running, and wasting all that water without paying attention. And now within 2 little paper cups, like that's enough to clean your toothbrush, to rinse at your mouth, and that's about it.
So we're sitting here in the richest state in one of the richest countries in the world, and we're here in the middle of the nation's most productive farm belt. We've produced so many fruits and vegetables here. There is a lot of wealth here, yet you guys haven't had running water for 9 months. I think people would be shocked to know that that's happening in America in 2015.
When I do talk to my friends from San Francisco and LA, we do talk about that. When you think of California, people from all over the world think we all live by a beach or there's water, palm trees everywhere. And the reality is, like you said, there is no water here. And when I went looking for some kind of help from the government, there was nothing out there.
In late October, a community organization which helps low-income families, called Self-Help Enterprises, gave Guillermo a temporary 250-gallon water tank, but he still has to be very careful about how he uses it.
I dropped a brick in the toilet yesterday. My girlfriend was watching.
I dropped a brick in the toilet.
Guillermo pulls out his phone and shows me a video about putting a plastic brick in the back of your toilet to save water. Learning to live with less water is a reality for all Californians. The state is under a mandate to cut back water use by 25%. Cities that don't could face fines.
If we all drop a brick in our toilets, we'll save California 67 million gallons of water a day.
In a state that's facing its worst drought in history.
So go into your bathroom.
Do you see a connection here to global warming, to climate change?
I would probably say so. It seems like we have summer 75% of the time, and winter comes and goes too fast. Here in the valley, we can see snow on the mountains, and we really don't see as much snow like we used to.
Guillermo's instinct is reflected in the science, too. Environmental scientists say even though we can't say climate change is causing California's drought, unusually warm temperatures are intensifying it. Too little snow in the mountains means not enough water is trickling through California's reservoirs and canals to farms and cities. More and more farmers are drilling wells and tapping into the groundwater. It's like putting more straws in the same glass, all sucking up the same drink. But farmers say they have to keep their crops alive somehow. After all, California feeds the world. It exports most of the world's almonds and sends oranges, wine, strawberries, and other crops to markets across the globe.
Pre-drought, we farmed 1,200 acres, and now we're down to about 700. So
okay.
We've lost almost half of our trees.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Just a few miles up the road from Guillermo Lopez's house, Sean Stevenson is walking through an orchard full of dead trees, brown and brittle. Some of them have been plowed up and lie dead on the ground. Sean is a sixth-generation farmer whose family's farmed since the 1800s in California.
This orchard right here, these are Valencia oranges, was planted about 30 years ago, so really these trees were in their prime as far as production goes.
Sean, how do you feel when you walk through an orchard that's just devastated like this?
You have mixed emotions. Part of it is that, you know, the landscape around you is changing dramatically. Part of it is you realize the capital investment you have in these trees, which is, you know, pretty substantial. You know, you think about the impacts to your income. We've had to lay off about half of our employees. So this is existential for us. Another year like the last two, and I mean, I don't know what it would be like.
Sean says the problem is not just nature. It's how California is managing its precious water. He thinks too much of it is being used to preserve habitat for wildlife, like endangered fish, at risk of going extinct. Instead, he thinks as much of the water as possible should be saved for farming.
Prior generations of Californians have understood that a place like California will always experience climate change. And prior generations planned for that with water infrastructure and dams and an ability to move that water through the state and create the golden goose that California has become, right?
You mentioned climate change. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's happening and is it a factor here?
Well, obviously it's changed. I mean, we have a drought. But if you look at historical records, California has experienced droughts like this in the past. Other places in the world, droughts come and go and weather changes. The whole issue of climate change, I think it's more of a political issue.
What do you mean?
I think if you really believed in climate change, you'd be building reservoirs. That's what I think. But that's not what the government's doing. So I think they use climate change as just another issue to, you know, herd people.
Farmers are frustrated the government hasn't put money toward building more reservoirs to capture water in really wet years so that it's available during droughts like this one. They're hoping this winter, predicted to be an El Nino year, will mean we'll finally get lots of rain. But climate scientists warn we could see sudden and heavy storms, and that could increase the risk of mudslides.
Right here.
As we got more into the mountain pass, it just looked nasty. It started raining real hard. It was hailing.
That's Shannon Doyle. Every weekday, he drives 500 miles in his diesel truck, hauling auto parts from Los Angeles to Fresno. But one journey he took in October really opened his eyes to the danger of heavy rain on California's bone-dry mountains.
Westbound side at mile marker 158. I'm headed eastbound now.
I thought to myself, you know what? This don't look right. I just had that strange feeling. So I just took out my phone and started recording because there was so much water that was coming off the ground, and you know, I never would have imagined that I'd have been stuck in a mudslide.
But he was stuck overnight in his truck in the mountains between Los Angeles and the Central Valley. This record-breaking mudslide was so extreme.